So just to give you a heads up, if you don't want to be in here for the next session, now might be the time to leave. But we would love it if you would stay, because I'm sure you would get many, many things out of it. You don't have to stay. I understand. a little bit of housekeeping is the final speaker for today was actually not able to make it, so she will not be talking about the barriers to adoption today. That was Alexa Lamb from University of Georgia now. But it is my definite pleasure to begin talking about and giving the broad overview of the SRI Clean Water 3 project, which is really looking at past, present, and future. And really the formulation or the genesis of our project was that as we looked at the different water challenges and concerns as academics, and we took a step back and actually said, hey, we need to figure out what these challenges and concerns are from the grower perspective. So that actually led to a planning grant, which really formed the basis and the foundation for our project. And realistically, when we were looking at these, we were saying, okay, so availability could be a problem for some. Do I have a backup water source? What contaminants are in my water, and should I reuse my water are some of the main questions. And looking at availability, we thought about that in a few different ways. But if we started looking at how growers looked at it, when we surveyed the growers and also we conducted roundtable discussions with them, we determined that there were several water management challenges that they were most concerned with. And so if you look at this, and this is just simply a frequency analysis of the amount of times that a growers mentioned specific terms. So, you know, over 30 growers mentioned that they were concerned about contaminants in their water when we're talking about water management. Or how do I manage my runoff? Do I actually have enough water with availability and the water quality and so on and so forth? And then if we took it a next step further and drilled down and actually looked at what are grower concerns related to water quality, these varied widely. But some of them were alkalinity, weeds, pH, salt intrusion, pathogens, and pesticides. So what we did is we took a sampling of these and began to look a little bit deeper into this. And this is really what formed our research questions when we were forming our project. So the aquatic weeds, and actually, frankly, pH changes in water are usually directly tied with nutrient contaminants and runoff. So that was why one of our selected areas of concern related to remediation were related to remediation of nutrient contaminants. Then if we look at pesticide contaminants, this is not just an issue of the efficiency of how they're applied, so they're more efficiently applied at the production area so that you have less in the water, but what happens if that water leaves the operation, or what happens when you recycle that water at the operation and you have unintended consequences of having reduced plant growth rates? That might be a good thing, but if it's a crop that it actually inhibits, that might not be what you want to have happen. And then to diseases and disease contaminants within these related to waterborne contaminants, what you don't want to do is have water that you're recycling and have those contaminants, the disease contaminants, actually reinfect or infect new crops. And that was one of their big concerns. So all of those rolled together. And then that next step is that alternative water source. So if we can convince them that recycling is the way, you still want to have another backup source, if at all possible. And if we look at how dynamics are changing within our populations and where people are moving, we have a lot of suburban sprawl into areas that were traditionally rural. And so some of our growers are having much more greater competition for those potable water sources, and they may have access to lower quality water sources, and how can we help them use those water quality sources? And I just said that. So, and then that the one of the last ones that they really mentioned, and it depends where you are as to whether you care, because if a grower has no regulations limiting their water, the fear of regulations doesn't necessarily make them do anything. Now, if you're a grower in California or in some of the states, Florida, Maryland, Oregon, or Texas, where they actually have regulations limiting what contaminants can be in their runoff, leaving the operations, or how much nutrients need to be reduced, then there is actually appreciable motivation for growers to change practice. So how do we get growers to change practice when they don't have to? And this is where we begin to look at some of the economics of those situations so that we can actually help them make informed decisions. And this led to our Clean Water Project, which we are beginning the fifth year as of September 1 of this project. USDA was in NEPA were very, very kind to us and gave us a decent amount of money to study a rather large problem, and we're like, we didn't get enough money, but many people would probably argue about that. But we have a lot of people at a lot of institutions working on this project, and this is highly interdisciplinary team. So we have our economists, our plant pathologists, environmental toxicologists, engineers, horticulturists, plant physiologists, I'm trying to look through the rest, and many, many others who I'm probably missed. But it's a very interdisciplinary team. And frankly, if we didn't have our research team members, none of the work would get done, or very little, or much less would have been accomplished, let's put it that way. We hire good people. They're amazing outputs of this project. And I think some of our students are probably some of the highlights of what we have managed to accomplish. We also have 11 growers who are working either as collaborating growers or are also serving on our advisory board. And this is a very, it's a nationally focused project, so we're looking at issues not just in one region, but across many regions. And our goal is to ensure that water does not limit the economic sustainability of our growers. So providing those resources so that they can actually succeed in the future when we're looking at our crystal balls and saying we may not actually have enough water for them, so how can we make the water that we do have go further or treat it so that we can reuse it. So we want to help them be more conservative with the use of water resources. And when one is more conservative with the use of water resources, and this is sort of the reduce aspect of our proposal, it also sort of tangentially cascades into you reduce your fertilizer inputs, you may be able to reduce your pesticide inputs, you may reduce your disease pressure. So all of these lead into that systems-based approach to managing water and actually hopefully achieving better outputs and outcomes. Then we also want to mitigate environmental impacts and then use viable alternative water resources. And this is really helping growers become comfortable with whatever resource, water resource they may have. And realistically, we wanted to do this by achieving these objectives. We were going to develop, or we have developed, online decision support tools that help growers with understanding and adopting recycling technologies. We've also developed technologies that can reduce contaminant loading into water. We've developed treatment technologies, and we are effectively we think we're effective. Well, you know, that could be debated, but we think we're effectively actually communicating project outcomes to our stakeholders as well as to others using workshops, newsletters, trade articles, scientific publications, venues like this to actually show what our project has accomplished. And realistically, so we've broken it down into four broad areas: reduce, remediate, recycle, and then understanding the system. And all of these are pretty much covered by outreach. If we don't actually get the information that we convey to our stakeholders, it doesn't mean anything. I mean, that we learned from our project to our stakeholders, it doesn't mean anything. Because if people don't use it, then why did USDA give us $8.2 million to solve a problem that apparently nobody cared about? So realistically, we know our growers care about water. It's been based on the support that they've given us. So we want to make sure that we're being judicious with how we are using these resources and to accomplish this. So I'm giving quick highlights on each of these components so you get an idea of the breadth of what the team has accomplished. And then we have two more special sessions, one tomorrow, I think 10:15 or 10 o'clock, and then one on Thursday. And you will be able to see a lot more information about very specific projects and outcomes that have actually occurred as a result of this project. So with regard to reduce, we have looked at it in quite a few different ways. If we reduce irrigation, this sort of, again, as I said before, trickles down into the other areas. Perhaps it affects disease pressure, pesticide residuals, or nutrient losses. And we have various individuals at many of these institutions who are actually working on addressing these issues. And one of the interesting things is we've never understood, or we haven't understood to date, how irrigation is, how the mechanism by which water is applied during irrigation actually influences how it runs off, whether it filters through the substrate and how much filters through or how much runs off the surface. We're actually finding this information out. And it's almost going to be, I think, one of the more important outputs of this project, because if you understand how much water is lost to surface runoff versus ground infiltration, it changes a lot about how you manage water. And then we'll also learn about that crop response, and then how does nitrogen and phosphorus move within those same systems. And so Tom, who's actually, are you actually talking in one of the special sessions, or is it Damon?
No, we both are.
You both are, okay.
Okay.
But, I mean, some of the work that they've been doing, and I apologize if I'm stealing a little of your thunder, but I'm not going to talk about it nearly as eruditely as you will. Looking at the different methods of irrigation, whether it's overhead, spray stake time, or spray stake sensor, and then looking at where that water goes, whether it runs off the operation, that turquoise color, or is actually filters in through the ground, the red. And these are numbers that we haven't had before. And again, this is something that if one is evaluating how one designs a production area, or if you're retrofitting an area, how one may want to change things, these are very useful data. Another output that was directly from the Virginia Tech project was, portion of the project was, where do you actually put your fertilizer in your pot? Can your pot actually kind of work as a biofilter? So can you reduce nutrient losses and still grow a quality plant that's saleable with half the amount of fertilizer or three quarters of the fertilizer? And there is some very good information that says, yes, that 75% incorporation or the 50% incorporation, depending upon what crop you're growing, actually is effective. And so this could be changing how our growers are actually putting their controlled release fertilizers in their container. And if you're losing less fertilizer at the front end, that's saving you a lot of money long term and a lot of resources. Then if we look at the remediate side, we have physical treatment technologies, which I really want to say deal with sort of managing sediment, bark, peat, algae kind of things. Then we, and also some of them that are more just by physical filtration and chemical interactions actually influence removal of contaminants from water. And then we also have the sediment filters with filter socks. So these are some very cool technologies that growers have actually adopted, especially the granular activated carbon for the plant growth regulator control. And filter socks technologies, it depends where you are. If you're in a very hilly area, filter socks work for you. If you're in a very flat area, filter socks actually may be more harmful than good during stormwater situations. We didn't know this information before, and these are tools and tips that we can actually have to tell growers why this research can work for them. And then if we look at the biological treatment technologies that many of our collaborators on this project are working on, we have stuff ranging from floating treatment wetlands to multiple, three teams are working with bioreactors now, which are basically just enclosed buckets or pits that you can put some carbon-based material in and actually affect remediation of nutrients as well as pesticides in these systems. And some of the work from my graduate student Natasha Bell is suggestive of that there is potential for removal of Phytophthora using bioreactors. So, I mean, there's some very good information, and these are low-tech, low-investment opportunities for those to use, for our growers to use. When we look at the recycling side of things, Jennifer Park and her team out at Oregon State have been doing an amazing job of helping growers understand the risk associated with different critical control points in their operations. So whether you're looking at the water in your pond, the water at your pump house, water after filtration, or wherever that is, or if we're looking at, let me see if the arrow will work, or whether you're looking at the pond here, or if you have a call pile, or your initial substrate, there's various critical control points within an operation that if you know where your highest risk is, you can choose to manage your pathogen risk there. And we now have the information that we have shared with the growers, our collaborating growers, and they know where they can do what they can do to improve and reduce risks associated with pathogens at specific locations in their operations. And then some of the work that UC Davis did, they were actually worked with our grower with Altman Specialty Plants, and they looked at the economics of how they were, I apologize, I'm blanking here, of how when Altman's actually installed a water recycling system within their operation and how much money it saved them versus when they had to purchase that water to actually use instead. So they've managed to save about $330,000 in 2015 and nearly $478,000 in 2016 just by instituting recycling, because of the cost of water in California is so much more than it is in somewhere else. So recycling water in Tennessee may not be nearly as economically beneficial, but depending upon your cost of your water and knowing what you have to do to treat it, what it can be a very effective tool. And they were actually able to get equip grants to help fund some of the installation of the technologies, the reservoirs that they needed, and the water management to actually accomplish this. So that it's a very nice output, partial output of the project. But realistically, when we look at recycling on site, what we want to get to is the point that we can look at an operation and say, okay, you have this type of production and you have this much land area, and what else can we do to help you to manage whatever contaminant is that you are most concerned about? So whether a carbon wall or a bioreactor underneath your production area might be a good idea, or that could be a slow sand filter in a production area, whether you actually choose to let vegetation grow in your runoff channels, or whether you install whatever other type of treatment technology one might could imagine, slow sand filters, rapid sand filters. We want to give growers a suite of options that they can then choose from based on whether they're worried about nutrients, worried about pesticides, worried about diseases, so that they can make informed decisions on what treatment technologies are most effective for their operation and are actually economically reasonable for their operation. And then if we look at sort of understanding the system, another component is how does water move in substrates? Because some of our growers grow really wet, where they apply 100% of the or 200% of the volume that the plant actually needs, and some of them grow really dry. And some of that is based on the substrate choice that they use. But if we can understand and better engineer these substrates so that they can say, I want to be able to get 30% leaching and have X amount of space, and I need to figure out how I need to water to do that, Jim O at Virginia Tech, and then Jeb Fields, who's now at Louisiana State University, a graduate student who graduated with his PhD and got hired during the Clean Water Project, figured this out and actually built some 3D models. And now we have very good understanding of different substrate components and how you can piece them together to actually engineer a substrate that gives you the porosity, the drainage, the water holding capacity that you actually want to grow the crops based on the quality of water, or I'm saying based on the quality of water that you have, but that's another component and step there. We also have this marketing water use to consumers. Bridget is an amazing asset to our team, and this is one of those things that learning what words we need to use to get people to be comfortable with the idea of recycling or reclaimed water, it's really, really important. And getting people understanding that people don't really know when they're in a drought or not, I was blown away by that. Because I think that's usually pretty obvious, but it's not. But it's all in that, just that, I guess, innate bias that we all have our own personal preferences and may or maybe not understand what's actually going on. But this is Bridget's helping us figure out how to help growers market better water use practices to their consumers. So potentially they might be able to sell their product for a little bit more money if they're actually growing it in a more water-wise fashion. And then Charlie and Dwayne Ingram, I don't know if I need to say any more, but they're amazing. And they have been looking at the economics of production practices conducting life cycle assessments of a variety of crops, East Coast, West Coast, large, small, woody, herbaceous, perennial, annuals, and developing carbon footprints and water footprints. And what this enables us to know is that which factors are the most influential in and contribute the most to that water footprint or that carbon footprint. Because if a grower wants to make a change, you want to pick an influential factor, if you can, so that you can actually see an appreciable change in cost or water use efficiency or whatever it is. If you pick one of the factors that, you know, 1% or 2%, you may not see a change. If you pick a factor where you can actually affect change, that's where you want to actually promote change. And so this probably also helps the team in figuring out which factors are critical for when we convey information to our growers. And then this is the stuff that I was really excited to have Alexa talk about, but she's not going to be at the conference. But she and Laura Warner and Peyton Beatty have created some cognitive maps that help us understand how growers make decisions, whether it's related to water conservation or whether it's related to water treatment. And if we know how they think about solving problems and thinking critically about situations, we can better figure out what type of information they need to make a decision that we want them to make, if that may sound creepy. But to better make that decision so that we can actually help them make an informed decision. So what this helps us with is how we actually present information. If we know that we need to reduce complexity, any of the technologies that we want to use need to be somewhat easily integratable within their systems, depending upon how complex their system is. If we can get someone to actually trial it on site, a technology on site, and serve as a guinea pig and let some other people come see how effective that technology is on their site, those are some of the best ways to get growers to adopt it. So the more information that we can get for them to look at and house it in a single place, the more likely we are to actually effectively accomplish adoption of change in practice. And I think actually our growers appreciate having better information that is concise, that is to the point, that gives them at the economics of it as well as the treatment efficacy of it, and let them make a decision for themselves. And then again, all of our work is then bounded by that outreach, which is really, again, and if you look at this is our project team, which is our PDs, our students and research assistants, but probably 10 of the people in this picture are the growers who are at the meetings with us and who are sort of fact-checking and making sure we're actually delivering that which we need to deliver. And I can't tell you how critical it is to actually get practical advice and feedback. And this is the point when, as researchers, we like to say we might become defensive and not want to hear the feedback, but that's the time when you actually need to sit back and say, you have a point, and we need to reevaluate what we're doing. Or, thank you, we love it that you love what we're doing. However that feedback may be delivered. But so we have a website that is amazing, that is run by Paul Fisher at UF, and he has help with Maria Paz. And what we have done is changed it from its old architecture to a new architecture that's a problem-based. So if you have a question about a pond or a reservoir, if you have a question about different water problems, you can actually go look, and if I were actually smart enough to have put the water problem tab in here, it would look, I have a question about pH and alkalinity of plant diseases. It would go through a litany of problems that growers might really be concerned with. So instead of front-loading it with how we think the information should be presented, we're making it a solutions-oriented website. And then we also have the very useful Ask the Expert, so if there's some topic that you just can't find with searching on the website, if you type in a question, it gets sent out as an email blast to the team, and then one of us responds usually within 24 hours. So that's a pretty nice output of the project. And also sort of just to, since this is a scientific conference and not a grower conference, we have been putting out newsletters for I don't know, since about 2016, I believe. But these newsletters go out usually about once a month or so. And so each newsletter averages about 1,700 recipients or 1,679 recipients. And we get about a 25% open rate or 26% open rate, or about 930 opened total. And what this means is that whenever we send out one of these newsletters, we get a spike in activity and traffic on our website. which is exactly what we want to have happen, because that means that more people, growers, extension agents, whomever may actually be have signed up for that newsletter, are actually able to come to the website and actually access more information than perhaps they initially thought they were going to access, which is a very nice thing. And we have majority of our respondents are from the United States, but we have at least the top, we have at least 10 or more countries, the rest of them are cut off, that are actually responding. So realistically, and I did really blow through this, but coming back to the past, present, and future, we surveyed their needs, where we're responding to their needs, and in the future what we want to see is operations, whether it's greenhouses or nursery, or perhaps it's other agricultural operations that need treatment, water treatment technologies, using treatment technologies that are efficient economically, that are effective for the contaminants that we want to treat. But realizing that all of these technologies can actually be customized at that specific grower. So it's a sort of a plug and play system. And by the end of the fifth year, which is not very much longer, we're going to have many more tools available on the website that will help growers make decisions. And we initially had started with some more very complex, large architecture type of tools, where it's a big system where I want to manage everything. And we realized that simplicity and elegance are a much more effective way to get people to use the information you have. So we revised how we're going to be releasing these tools, and we're again focusing on single, very simple, elegant solutions. And John's going to be talking about one of those on Thursday. Where is it? Wednesday. So lots of information. We hope that we've piqued your interest and that you actually will come to some of the other sessions. And at this point in time, since I am a little bit early, which is what I was hoping, if you have any questions, I'm happy to take any questions. And there are none. Yes, sir. So the question was related to whether it was all containerized above ground systems or in ground systems with cover crops. And for this project, we limited its scope to containerized systems. And because it's really hard to measure infiltration, let's just put it that way. We were looking at some of those dynamics, and it added a layer of complexity when we already had a very complex system. But yes, no, cover crops are effective, which you know. That's probably why you asked the question. But, yeah. That's outside the scope of this project. Yeah. Any other questions? We'll go here. Yes? If we get one, we're doing really good. Is that about right? Is that fair if I were guessing how many we get? Yeah. So it's a very manageable. I mean, if you're on a hot topic that's really worrying people, yeah, you might have more than you want to deal with, but we don't right now. It basically, the email goes to the Peely, who sort of manages the web interface at UF, and then she blasts it out to the team. And then somebody basically says, yeah, I want to address that question. And then we address it with that person and follow up if follow-up is needed. Yeah.